NZ. Planet Audio.
Business community isn't happy with Labour. So what? Let's have the environment report next to the business report on Morning Report every morning. So we balance them. I don't know why business got away on this in the 80s, but it's as if everything should bow down to business and money. And yet most of these very rich people, you can guarantee, will die probably at those final moments going, what the hell? I missed the whole point of life. I can't take any of this with me. And I didn't give back enough.
Well, I really think that this is what needs to come to the surface a little bit more. Who are we and why are we here? What the heck is it all about? Is it really about getting a whole lot of material things? Is it really about that? So once people actually get some consciousness about what life is about, we'll make some progress.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth. Today I have in the studio Lisa Eyre and Liz Gunn, fellow hosts of this Green Planet FM program, and we're going to talk about strategic possibilities and relationship to New Zealand as a whole. As most listeners who have tuned into this program will be aware, it is premised on environment, health and consciousness, as all three are integrated, especially in relationship to a dynamic whole. Naturally, we want to be upbeat, and that when we look at the state of our country, we realize that the planetary systems, such as climate and the atmospheric envelope that envelops our planet, is affected by oceans, the seasonal tilt of the planet, sunlight from summer to winter, and the effect of what is happening on so many other unseen levels. However, to bring the subject that we're going to talk about today down to our everyday-to-day level, where we as families and community need to healthily breathe, drink, eat, and have shelter, have paying occupations, and govern ourselves first at a local level, then at a national level, is where I'd like to take this focus. As mothers, Lisa and Liz inherently know that when you have children, virtually every action is based on making sure that they are cared for not only with love and harmonious family relationships, but every physical need like quality clothing, bedding, a healthy environment, good neighbours, education, and freedom of expression, and so forth. If one listens to the news today, it is still a continuation of crisis after crisis, especially global news, where situations flare up and then die down for a while, and this has been continuous for all our lives. So back to New Zealand, where we New Zealanders are most definitely one of the most fortunate countries on earth, where every child can wake up every morning knowing that war and bloodshed, even civil disturbance, doesn't exist. So how can we all come together? Can unity consciousness on a global scale be our next evolutionary step? Kia ora, Lisa.
Kia ora, Tim.
Kia ora, Tim. Lovely to be here.
Thank you, Lisa and Liz, for coming today to share together our intent for a better world to come. Because we all have concerns for our fast-coming future, and we really want a better world, particularly for children. And we'd like to think that New Zealand can really lead from the front, and that some brilliance and some innovative ideas can flow through so that New Zealanders can get behind these new ways of looking at the world. So, Lisa, what do you see as an important issue for New Zealanders to become aware of and then be involved with?
Well, to narrow it down to one issue is quite tricky, really. I mean, we have wrecked the world, not just New Zealand, but the world, for our kids. And we have to accept that. And why should we leave it for them to sort it out? Surely we, right now, can start doing things. And one of the things that concerns me the most, this is my particular issue right now, is the lack of insects. When I go driving in the car, I don't get any insects on the windscreen anymore when I drive at night. Or when I don't draw the curtains and I leave the lights on Do you know, in the 1970s, my window was covered with moths. Now, if those creatures aren't there, then what are the birds eating?
Yes.
You know? I mean, and then if we kill all the mice, you know, I was thinking of the moorporks, kill all the mice, kill all the insects, then we'll kill the moorporks, and so on and so forth with other bird species.
So what you're saying, Lisa, is in many ways is that the mice eat ground insects, that with a decline of mice and insects, just saying that the moorpork is an owl, it's a nocturnal bird, and feeds on mice.
So we have a complete collapse, eventually, of the biosphere. And I don't know if that will be stopped worldwide. But we can stop it in New Zealand. We can start much more organic-type or permaculture-type farming. We can pressure for this and say, no, we don't want these herbicides and pesticides in New Zealand because it's going to make the place collapse.
There is a horrible feeling, I agree with you, Lisa, that somehow American corporates have come into New Zealand and gained the ear of government after government. And I wonder how they do it, but one only has to look at the corridors of power in Washington to see they are extremely practiced lobbyists. But what has happened, because this is a country where we all loved clean and green, where we all embraced no nuclear, and I wonder if particularly in the last decade under John Key, there was a real opening of the doors to being persuaded, and they are extraordinarily persuasive. You need to think of them like the most brilliant advocates in court. They are very persuasive with this does no harm, 1080, for example. This will do no harm, and yet we know that animals suffer horrific deaths. We know that our kauri dieback is linked with a weakening of this magnificent tree, and it's almost a canary in a mine, really, telling us something is wrong in our soil. So could that be all these poisons we're pouring on our land? To me, along with the insect collapse, it just tells me there are signs everywhere. My children do not want that world. And that's what you're saying, Lisa.
Yes, I absolutely am. I mean, we inherited a most beautiful world and we have used it. We have used our Mother Earth, not respected and loved her, but used and abused. And I just don't think that we can carry on like this. I mean, I think that the Earth will survive, the Earth will recover, but will she actually continue supporting a species like humans?
Something more hopeful, sorry, Tim, just for a moment. A mother of two living in Oakland in California signed up for a study evaluating whether organic diets could make a difference in the amount of pesticides found in her body, and she thought they might detect a little bit. Well, they found all 14 chemicals that they were testing for. Every single member of every family in that study had detectable levels of all 14 chemicals. But here's the hopeful thing, if you're starting to pull your hair out as you listen to this, after just 1 week, on an organic diet, every single person in that study saw significant drops in those pesticides, and many of those were linked to increased risks of autism and cancer, Parkinson's, even infertility. So can you imagine if 1 week on an organic diet without sprays, the body is so responsive, our Mother Earth is equally responsive, look after me, and I will give you abundance, as I used to before you started doing these industrialized sprays that in effect were based on chemicals they couldn't get rid of in World War I. This is the most egregious part of it. They didn't know what to do with their horrible chemicals that poisoned people in World War I. And so they said, why don't we force them on gullible farmers and tell them they'll help them grow crops? And at no stage did the benighted farmers of the West go, this doesn't make sense. For centuries we've done without these and had plenty of crops.
Well, the interesting thing is when I was a child, I was made to eat liver. I couldn't stand it. But you know what? We don't eat liver anymore. Because of the toxic farming that we do, it's actually not allowed to sell liver because the cows and sheep have all eaten these chemicals, grass grown from these chemicals, and it would make us ill.
Oh, so that makes sense because the liver collects toxins in the body.
Yes.
That's an industrial secret within the abattoir and the meat industry in this country.
Wow. How come I figured it out then?
I've had a interview based on that. Yes, do a search on greenplanetfm.com. Debbie Swanwick, originally of Soil and Health, spokesperson for Organic Health. Yes, that cadmium and superphosphates are basically impacting health in animals. And at Waikato, major problems. So, yep, cattle and sheep, over 18 months old, not allowed to be used for human consumption. consumption. That, yes. So what they're doing is they're hiding all that. They can't even use it for dog or cat pet food because it is so poisonous. So across New Zealand, all the animals, the cows and the sheep, have their livers burnt, I think it is. Definitely put away.
And liver used to be great for kids to eat for the iron.
This is true. Yeah, so this is just one, listeners, that we're dealing with. And Lisa, there are other ones too, aren't there?
Well, there's many things. But what I want to say is that we really need to realise that New Zealand can fix this quite quickly. So I think that we are in the situation where we've got to actually stand up to this. The other thing is, though, I've started a group called Survival Movement New Zealand on Facebook. And in under 2 weeks, we've got about 90 members wanting to join. And this is all about not only the collapse of the insects, but also preparing for climate change, not just planting trees and not using plastic bags, but actually realising that some of it we can't stop. I mean, how much is man-made, how much isn't? I'm not even going to that debate. I don't care. Let's prepare, keeping ourselves free of pollution, free of so many car farts and cow farts and car exhaust fumes, and do the best we can there, and then prepare and say, yes, we're going to have more storms, so we'll have to prepare for all of that. We have to prepare for drought. We have to prepare for floods. So we have to prepare for food shortage. So I think the thing that's going to hit New Zealand and the world the most in the next decade is going to be food shortages. I don't think we'll have water shortage in New Zealand, but food shortages. And so we have to look at how are we going to deal with this. And so, therefore, we have to look at fuel as well, petrol. And how are we going to get food around the country? Because, I mean, food is grown in the countryside and the cities need to have it. And if we have an economic collapse, we'll be without petrol. There's all these complicated linked issues.
Everything is linked. At the moment, our wheat is grown in Australia. And so if we want to have just a stable of flour, which I'm not really a wheat eater, but we've got to bring it in from Australia because we've offshored that part of our industry. Can I just cut in and then I'll let you go with this? Because biological agriculture is really important because, one, it takes out all the chemicals out of the soil cycle. And Graham Saint, Arden Anderson, Christine Jones, and recently Dr. Phil Gregory from Canada, they have proved that you can take out all the CO2 out of the atmosphere very, very fast, and you're not using any chemicals. It's all to do with minerals. It's all to do with a soil test. And we can actually, if we wanted to, we could have very good, high-quality foodstuffs leaving New Zealand in the form of milk, cream, or cheese, and butter. But we have to have a change at the higher levels, which you mentioned. The lobbyists that chase up government are not looking at biological or regenerative agriculture that's got an organic intent. And I can't understand why.
Well, I have a friend who has an organic farm in the Lake District in England, and she said that the farmers were paid to have one field fallow every year so it could regenerate. And she had this beautiful field of wildflowers and all of that in there with no goats on it at all. Now, what we could do here is we could do that, but we could also have the government pay or give a subsidy or a tax relief for growing something other than meat, because that's what we need here.
Hemp is a prime example of that, and I've got a lovely young 26-year-old friend, Cameron Sims, who has a business plant culture. If you want to go online and order his product, it's beautiful hemp hearts with most of the amino acids in that product. So you're getting everything you get almost in meat in this hemp heart food that is delicious, sprinkled on anything. Toast and avocado and hemp hearts, just mouthwatering. But here's a 26-year-old millennial thinking ahead, thinking, I want to make money, yes, but I absolutely want to make a better world because the boomer generation before me has not cared. And I agree with what you said earlier, Lisa. I think this has been a generation where we were given so much free university, lots of freedoms in our early life. And so many have gone down the path of such selfishness. I don't understand it. There are many of us boomers who don't feel like that, who relate well to the millennials coming through, who want to make a better world. And we still have that idealism. But unfortunately, a lot of those in power seem bereft of inspired ideas. And on that note, Tim, I think I was hoping with Jacinda for a really clean broom to come through and come with really fresh policies. And the longer we go, the more I'm feeling like I'm watching a replay of Obama in America.
Yes.
I thought, oh, this is going to be a JFK moment, I told my kids. Yes. This will be a new leader for a new world. And he simply did more of what the Republicans did, only sort of Republican light. And I'm feeling Jacinda is allowing the backroom boys to say to her, let's just keep pretty steady and follow what we've done and sign up to the TPPA and keep doing pesticides and sprays and don't rock the boat too much and we'll get to homelessness one day. Why can't we have a leader who comes in and says, a little bit like Sanders, who's raised $6 million just in the first few days of saying, I'll put my hand up, because we are all so hungry. Those of us who want a better world, we are all so hungry for some leadership with courage and vision, and we don't have it in this country.
Well, I do think that Jacinda's heart is in the right place.
Ah, that's
and I
all
do
very
think,
well.
Yeah, but I'm getting there, because they're going to have this well-being budget. Now, that, I think, is leading to what you are asking for with not homelessness and all of those things. This well-being budget that they're preparing for, I read an article in the Herald at the weekend, and it said Adrian Orr from the Reserve Bank is already talking that sort of talk. I think the business fraternity are looking a little bit surprised. And the Treasury is coming up preparing for this well-being budget. So let's give Jacinda a chance. But it isn't just Jacinda. She can't make those decisions on her own. And you know what? The Labour Party's got some real old guard in there that will be dragging their feet for anything new. But you know, she's got a baby. I've got a 5-month-old granddaughter. These babies, we've got to make a world that's going to be okay for them.
Absolutely.
And she's going to be aware of that.
And I think pretty words are good, but pretty words in the end can be just pretty words. And I've experienced a lot of that in my life and learned to be extremely cynical about pretty words, but not cynical when it comes to people actually taking action. To take action, you have to be willing to put a few noses out of joint. And I think her steady as she goes holding of the reins so far has been way too mild. And of course, when I say Jacinda, I mean her and Grant Robertson. I was very concerned last year when I saw Grant Robertson at Waitangi Day and I said, I'd like to interview you. We had a camera there about us signing up to this new version of the TPPA. And he immediately shut down. And the person who's making an interview for whom we were doing some filming, I won't say the name because I haven't cleared it with him, was rung the next day by Grant Robertson's office, and the comment was, Grant Robertson won't be allowing an interview. Now, to me, that's more of that horrendous sort of watching of your back and making sure you don't ruffle feathers and not being willing to front up to the difficult questions. This is a real issue for me, our lack of strong media questioning our politicians, really giving them the once-over.
I thank you for that, because Jacinda is surrounded by suits. From Treasury, from all the different money men everywhere. And she needs some strong woman behind her to support her. And I don't know if they're coming through. And this is my big concern. That's all men talking money.
Well, there's Goldritz and the Green Party. But you see, one of the other things that she's having to deal with is Winston Peters. And I think that that might be part of the problem, not necessarily with the TPPA, because I don't know whether I believe New Zealand First at all or not. But they did say that they come out and say they were against the TPPA. But yeah, I think the pressures from overseas are huge. I mean, if you look at Venezuela and what's going on and the external pressure going on there to get rid of Maduro, who I don't think is a particularly good president, but I think he's let the country go horribly. But then what about all the sanctions that Venezuela is getting from the US, and then the US says, oh, Maduro's let everybody get so poor. Yeah, why?
Haven't we seen this before? Oh, America better come in and rescue, inverted commas. Yeah, right. An oil-rich country that America's going to rescue? Caveat emptor. Beware of that. There'll be a lot going on. And apparently there were queues of locals in Venezuela queuing up to sign a document saying we do not want American, inverted commas, help. Because they don't want this manipulation behind the scenes. None of us do. Most of us see through politicians big time now, I think. That's the one great gift of Trump. You cannot believe in the leaders unless you have a brave, courageous, maverick leader who's not trying to get power for himself or herself, not trying to stay in power, and who's willing to rock a few boats. So Alexandra or Ocasio-Cortez or even Sanders, you know, they're willing, they stand up and they say, I'm my own man, like it or lump it. but I do really stand for something. At the moment, I'm not sure what Jacinda stands for in New Zealand, except kind of keep the ship steady. And as Tim says, don't bother the business community too much. There was all this stuff in the papers. Business community isn't happy with Labour. So what? Let's have the environment report next to the business report on Morning Report every morning. So we balance them. I don't know why business got away on this in the 80s, but it's as if everything should bow down to business and money. And yet most of these very rich people, you can guarantee, will die probably at those final moments going, what the hell? I missed the whole point of life. I can't take any of this with me. And I didn't give back enough.
Well, I really think that this is what needs to come to the surface a little bit more. Who are we and why are we here? What the heck is it all about? Is it really about getting a whole lot of material things? Is it really about that? So once people actually get some consciousness about what life is about, we'll make some progress.
I agree, Lisa. And actually, there's an argument to say the whole business idea is a crock anyway, because they're saying that long-term neoliberalism causes a country where money is amassed in the hands of the few and the majority are struggling and going without. What that causes is a marked lowering of the overall living standard in a country. So it's just like a classroom. It's no different from a teacher walking into a classroom where two of the children in the class have all the papers and pens and the rest of the class have nothing, or maybe they're sharing one piece of torn paper and a pencil. And then the teacher would go, well, I can't possibly make this work. This classroom won't work because you kids have got everything, you two. And the rest are going to be causing fermenting and causing trouble and everything's going to be falling apart in the rest of the class. So how about you share your papers and all your pens and your stockpile of stuff and we'll just have a whole classroom that works. There's your metaphor for society. Let's share.
Share a little bit more, but not entirely, because I mean, you're talking to a business person here,
yeah.
And I feel that small to medium enterprises are so essential to keep the economy ticking.
I agree.
And for me, yes, I think it was fair. I was the one, or my ex-husband, were the ones that had to get out of bed at night if the alarm went off at work, or if something went wrong. Christmas Day, he was painting the factory floor. So the sorts of things that we had to do that our employees didn't have to do, you know, does make a difference. So fine, if we're working hard, then we can receive more. But how much more? That is the question. And in Japan, I think they have that from the top to the bottom, there can only be a 10% difference or something. I forget the exact figures. But we could actually bring in a law that says there can only be a certain amount more that
the corporate leader
gets, yes, to getting something like $3 million a year for running Coca-Cola. Unbelievable.
And not only that, there's a share bundle as well, so that when they leave, they take their shares away. There are all sorts of incentives that are built into this whole package. But looking at the corporates, they don't really care for the human species other than the profit and the bottom line. It's a big challenge for me, because what sort of people are they who would do this when they realise from their perspective that the whole human endeavour is now going closer to the cliff all the time?
It doesn't make sense. And while, Lisa, I acknowledge you did have all that responsibility running a business, you did. But imagine getting up at 4 a.m. to go and work on a factory floor, and the cold and the hard conditions and the noise. And, you know, a lot of very brave people, the person who, I often think of the person who cleans offices all night, or, you know, and they do it for minimal pay. The woman who, or the man who helps somebody who's disabled and is cleaning up, perhaps somebody who doesn't have control of their bowels or is doing that sort of work for minimal pay. It is only right that these important jobs are acknowledged with much better pay. I think this neoliberal idea of it's menial work, supposedly, so therefore it deserves only low-grade pay, doesn't wash with me. And I agree, when you have responsibility, a bit more. I think we are on the same page there. But the question becomes how much more, and it's become such a vast difference now.
Yes, I never, ever paid the minimum wage, ever. Not even for dishwashing.
Brilliant.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah,
That was $2 above the minimum wage.
If only more businesses thought like that, because it's just ethical. You know, I think one of the ways to run a business too is to give the people working in the business shares in it. To say, you work hard and build my business, we'll all benefit. I am only as good as the least among my group, my tribe. I just think that is a basic tenet of a healthy society. Well, yes. So I want to bring everybody up.
I mean, shares, once you have got shares, I mean, we never got to the point of having shares. That wasn't what we did. But I think, actually, after I sold it, because I sold it to the Seventh-day Adventists.
The sanitarium, is it?
This was Lisa's.
No, I didn't sell it to Sanitarium. I sold it to the owners of Sanitarium, which is the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And, for example, everybody got health insurance paid.
Fantastic.
You know, I could have sold it for considerably more than I did, but they looked after the staff. I don't think they're stunning, but they definitely do better than perhaps some of the other people that were interested in the business.
Yes, because New Zealand once, we were a cooperative country. We started off with co-ops everywhere, and we had trust banks, we had insurance societies, mutual societies, building societies, not only that, farmers. We still have today 12,000 dairy farmers who are part of a cooperative. And so as a country, we have been built on cooperatives where we all work together. We even had pubs that were run by trusts. There was so much going on and everybody was part of this. There was no money going offshore, really, in comparison to what there is today. And so we've got to have a whole new look at how we can collaborate more as a country and as a people to work a new business model. We had to be innovative. And I think there that we used to have estate advances, which used to be a government agency that loaned to the people at 3.5%.
That would help these businesses that Lisa's rightly saying help get New Zealand going.
That's right. Mm. And then going right back to...
What a great idea, estate advance.
Mickey Savage in 1935, when the New Zealand government started to actually build its own houses and have money loaned within the government, within the country, and people could actually get this money to build their houses. But now we've always got to go offshore to get loans, and we never know who we're getting these loans from.
Yes.
And they never tell us how this all happens. And
as so, we saw in the GFC and the global financial crisis.
Well, you're saying they're going offshore to get the money, but banks create money out of nothing. Banks just go on their computers and they write in a figure, and there you are, you've got the money. It's a myth. It's nothing. It's nothing. Money is nothing. And yet, we pay interest on it. So that's a major thing that's wrong in New Zealand and the world. And, of course, when you try and pull out of it, then you get the heavy might of the US on you. But we should actually have the Reserve Bank creating money in New Zealand. We shouldn't have private banks doing it. And then when you have a situation like Christchurch, they don't have to charge interest on that in order to rebuild Christchurch. I mean, we were nearly out of debt. Helen Clark nearly got New Zealand out of debt.
I regrettably spoke over Lisa. What she was saying was that it was the National Party that got us back into debt.
And the National Labour Party have brought us right up to in debt again. We're still not as bad as a lot of countries in the world, but we still have huge debt, which we then pay interest on. So what is the point of that when we could actually be debt-free if we use the Reserve Bank for money creation instead of private banks?
Seems incredible, doesn't it, that these conservative governments around the world run up debt? They're meant to be conservative, meaning taking care and doing things judiciously. But look at the debt Trump has run up as well, and Key did too.
Well, Key was in the pockets of the bankers, of course.
Well, yes, and of course they used Christchurch as an excuse, but it was no excuse, and Christchurch has been notorious for the very long time, the tardiness of the rebuild anyway, so it didn't even help it be efficient. So it does feel like we're all in a little bit of a world of the emperor's new clothes. You know, how much of the emperor is naked in all of these things? You know, business, should it be really running the world? Has it proven it makes a better world? I would say no. I would say absolutely not. Men, certainly men of a certain age, some of them in America, if you look at the white male, a lot of them need to move on, the Mitch McConnells and the... A lot of these older males who seem rather stuck. I think women, because we've raised children, have had to learn to be very flexible. When you start raising children, don't you think, Lisa, some days the most extraordinary disasters happen, and women have this incredible capacity to adapt quickly and think very fast about solutions and make something that works for the group. Whereas sometimes males, and I'm sorry, Tim, I'm generalising a bit here, but say the archetypal...
I do agree.
archetypal male sort of authority figure of the 50s and 60s, certainly many of us were brought up by that. Those men certainly were more rigid in their thinking and less adaptable. And I think that's flowed through into the corporate world, and that corporate world model needs to change, which it is slowly. There are some really good men coming through as leaders, along with women. But I think we need to play to our female strengths of adaptability.
Yes, but we still need business. It's corporate business that's a problem. We need those transactions because we can't just grow everything ourselves. We've got to be able to have business in the way that you sell things and buy things.
I agree, but could business be different? Could it
definitely
be far more listening, far more adaptive, far more open to taking in wider issues? I think women are good at that when we play to our female strengths.
I do agree.
Yeah.
Working to a win-win. I mean, he with the most toys wins was a statement in the war of words between America and the Soviet Union. What I'm having difficulty with is that a lot of the men are so frightened of sharing, sharing power, and they're also quite empty inside. And so all they're doing is having all this money to stack it around them so that, look, I'm successful. I've got 10 houses, 2 helicopters, a yacht, etc., solely because they're empty inside. And so I maintain, forget about what's that, and let's see what we can do for children. Because all these statistics are saying that there's a collapse going on in the biosphere. And if you have a look out to 2050, the future is fairly grim.
Well, we could have a leader who says, let's plant. I mean, China and India, funnily enough, have planted millions of trees in the last decade, and it's having a noticeable effect already.
Tens of millions.
I often drive through the volcanic plateau and think, what if we got all our homeless and our unemployed, and we got them out planting trees in this area? Or the Mackenzie country, which I think used to be, it sort of has a dramatic emptiness to it, but it used to be covered in trees. We could replant this in New Zealand.
Yes, but we haven't got laws that could require us to take people to those places. This is part of the problem, is the freedom of the individual means that you can't necessarily take people to do those sorts of things. Also, you know, I tried to employ people from the Dole. I couldn't put them in my factory. They weren't people that you could put making food, where you had hygiene responsibilities.
With training, do you think they would have responded?
Not the ones that were sent to me. I can only talk about the ones that were sent to me. Mm. So there are quite a few that have suffered dreadfully as children, and I've seen this as a primary school teacher. They have suffered dreadfully, and they are damaged people. Mm. And when people in society say, oh, these people are lazy, these people are no-hopers, I get very upset because I think, well, why are they? Why are they no-hopers, as they might be labelled? And this is because we are not looking after them, because our education system is so underfunded. You can see the children that are going to have difficulties in later life. I had one child in my class, and he got the snips and he cut up the goldfish in the next door classroom. You know, kids like that. Now, they need to be given so much love, so much affection, so much help.
Yes.
And that little boy's mother had left him when he was 18 months old. Dad worked all night, and the neighbours used to keep an eye on the kids in the next door house.
That's so sad.
That little boy. And those are the people that will later be socially dysfunctional and will be abused and put down by society, the society we've got. So we've got to be able to pick these kids up in school. And the other thing is, we've got to teach self-responsibility for some that perhaps are a little higher up the level than that poor boy was, to teach self-responsibility rather than victimhood, because that will empower people. And that, I feel, is extremely important to do in schools and will help our future. Because these kids will come through empowered rather than thinking, oh, well, our parents have ruined the world for us.
Yes, I remember doing Garden to Table, and that was really wonderful to see these little kids in South Auckland. Oh, they'd show me round and tell me the names of all the vegetables, then we'd cook a meal and saying to them, do you like the greens? Do you like the salad? Yeah, I never used to eat them. They would often say, now I love them and I've got mum and dad planting some in the garden. That Garden to Table program in schools is brilliant, but every school should be teaching gardening. Every child should know how to grow things. Getting back to your point earlier about food shortages, Lisa, I sat there horrified because I thought this is such an abundant country and we could all have either community gardens, which could be encouraged by the government.
You are listening to fellow hosts Lisa Eyre and Liz Gunn talking about the challenges we have in New Zealand and how we can go about with solutions so that we can set in place a future that all children can flourish and grow into the light of their own true selves.
I want to mention Ihu Matau. If you have come across this or look it up online, Ihamatao, and it is the first land that was farmed by Maori when they arrived from Hawaiki. They came through the heads at Manukau, and this is where all Maori originate. And this gorgeous woman, Paini Newton, is trying to save this land from Fletchers doing another 480 of its endlessly greedy developments, but on land that is deeply sacred, under which many, many Maori were killed by the early settlers. But what's most fascinating, when you stand on the land, she is so feminine. It's like standing on the womb, in the womb of a woman. She is so fertile. This land will grow anything. And what they want to turn it into is a food forest where all of us can go, where children who've never grown things can have a little communal garden or come and get food, where the homeless can come and pick up food, where you can get off the plane at Mangere Airport and come not a long distance, just say 10 minutes, and walk through trees and walk through gardens that are providing food. What a brilliant way to get Kiwis back in touch with how much the land gives. And please sign up to support Ihu Matau and let Fletchers know you do not want them to do that development. Sorry, Tim, I have to get that in here because I so believe in it.
I agree with you completely. To just tie in a few things with what you're both saying, I worked in Parimarima Maximum Security Prison here in Auckland some years ago. And I was even in D Block, which is the worst of the worst. And when you have a look at what's going on, all these inmates were once children who were not loved in their home. Mm. So it goes all the way back to that. A lot of them didn't know who their father was, and the mother also, in many cases, didn't want to know who that child was. So the child was basically abandoned very early in the piece, and as an end result, they finally end up in jail.
But you see, the parents will have been through the same pattern.
In many cases,
it's
yes.
It's how can we change the pattern? And that's why these children need so much help. And the education system, teachers can see it. Teachers can see who needs this help. And the kids could have the help. I just don't understand. I mean, why did they shut down the help camps where they could take children for 6 weeks and put them in the health camps and look after them and feed them well and make them feel good about themselves?
Which was started by my great aunt, Dr. Elizabeth Gunn, after World War One.
Oh, fantastic.
Because she said to a farmer friend of hers, if I had all these kids who had TB and are hungry after World War One, if I could get them out in the fresh air, on the land, with good food and exercise, their health would come up. There was a big problem with TB after World War One. And this farmer went down to Wellington, where she was in the Ministry of Health, and said, where's that gun woman? Come on, I've got the army tents, I've got the land, you come through. And she did, and with discipline in those days. But she loved those children. I've read her diaries. They meant a lot to her. But then it evolved, as you say, Lisa, into the potential to help children with emotional issues, but was underfunded all the way through.
Yes. And now we've got a lot of real good holistic modalities to really assist these children and their parents to essentially clear up their past, clean out their emotional shadow, and help them find their own inner light, get their own inner candle ignited again. Because what's happened is that, in many ways, parents today have lost contact with their own inner candle, and they're just sort of surviving like they're born to reproduce and die. But life
and
is
watch
far.
Television.
And watch television, yes. This is one of the biggest problems, is that TV is actually, in many cases, just programming our children to not be responsible.
Or online media, yes.
Yes, so I feel that we could really do something, you know, and everybody's making such a fuss about a capital gains tax. Now, I'm a landlady, and it's going to hit me, but I don't care. You know?
Good on
so
you,
what?
Lisa.
And there are other landlords that can say the same thing, you know, yes. Landladies. I mean, really, isn't it correct that if we have enough money to have more than one house, then isn't that okay if when we sell it? I mean, actually, at the moment, I'm not selling. I've got two houses with my two sons living in them, and they pay me a reasonable rent instead of an exorbitant rent to somebody else.
Yes.
But, I mean, in a way, I shouldn't be hit by it, but I probably will be because they won't have exemptions for odd people like me. But why not? And I see all this stuff all over Facebook. People who actually would probably benefit from it, totally ignorant because the media has told them that a capital gains tax is no good. And really, when I look at it, some of those people don't know anything about it. It's ridiculous. But this is why we should have more tax. I don't believe in the current system. It doesn't work. But we're not going there today. Let's look at the system we've got. In the system that we've got, we need to tax the rich much, much more. And in the past, they were taxed more. And then we did have money for all those things. So there's your root cause.
That's right. Sometimes it used to be up to nearly 70%, 70 cents in the dollar. Well, that's all gone. Even overseas, they used to have very high rates. That has been whittled down and whittled down, and we've been programmed to accept that.
And AOC in America, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, is advocating this, and of course being howled down with calls of socialism. But what's happened since Bernie last stood is an interesting shift in the zeitgeist. It's slowly happening, but it is happening. And that is, who cares if you're called a socialist? Because to me, I'm not really any political party, political colour. What I do care about is society, and a socialist is someone who cares about society working. So actually, let's turn socialist into a great compliment, because neoliberalist seems to me a far more pejorative term, because it's paramount to great selfishness. On that note of people amassing things, I heard a story of someone I used to work with fronting breakfast. I won't say the name, but a friend of mine, her daughter's in a dance class, and his daughter's in that class. And she would go each week and look out the window and go, oh, he's bought another car. Tonight it's the Rolls Royce. Oh, no, it's the Maserati. Oh, no, it's the BMW. And his own daughter is going, this is too much. This is not what the next generation wants. They're not coveting these things. Why has our generation, the boomers, been so covetous? Who needs 12 luxury cars under their house? Nobody, I say, nobody. You could sell one of those and make enormous difference to hundreds of lives.
Well, you can't take them with you when you're pushing up the daisies.
That's it.
I agree with you. The boomers, my generation, I hammer them. Solely because they've had their cake and eat it too. And now, if they can, they'll pick up a flyer that says, oh, look, there's a cruise on the Volga River this winter. Let's go over to Europe and enjoy a cruise, because they've got all this excess money.
I love that you said that on the Volga, because my father was of that generation where privilege breeds responsibility. That was his aphorism, that if you have the money to have a good education and to have your own home, Lisa, as you say, a home, you're set up for life. If you own more than that, you give back through the tax system to help those, to lift the wider populace to also do well. And anybody who was showy with their wealth was vulgar. So that vulgar, the river, reminding me of how vulgar ostentatious wealth is and how vulgar it is to be rampant consumers in an era when clearly the world is going to hell in a handbasket, unless we all pull together and we help all each other and we help Mother Earth, Papa Tuanuku.
Well, I was just thinking, I'm wearing a top that I bought in 2014.
Yes.
And it still looks reasonable. I mean, we don't have to have new all the time.
No, and that's that whole thing of clothing as mothers, and think about ethical clothing, think about companies more and more that are being set up to make sure we don't pollute the planet so much and that we recycle clothing. There's another whole conversation, Tim, there.
Very good. Yes, well, it's all about perception in so many ways. When I was a kid, I lived in a rural sector in Matamata. And all the farmers surrounding our farm all voted for the National Party. But Dad didn't. He never did. He had to drive 20 kilometres across the Waikato Plains to find another farmer who didn't vote for National. But one of the more interesting things was that the kids at school used to say to me, oh, Labour, if you're Labour, you're a socialist. And what the socialists are going to do, they're going to nationalise all the farms across New Zealand. That was a story that was put out that was socialism was going to be a creeping way towards communism. And that's what I had to withstand in those days. So what it is that a lot of people haven't got a true understanding of history, and we really need to be educated and learn a lot more. And in the present moment, education is we need radio programs like this. We need bloggers who have got a deep understanding of the ramifications of everything. And so, and just closing this off, we have to actually find ways to collaborate and work together. Our only way through, and education is a big one, and how do we do this?
Well, it's actually not education. It's not too difficult to change things. I mean, we look at the curriculum and we say, well, actually, you know, this isn't where we want to go. And so then you have a few working groups and set it up. I mean, that's how they got a lot more Maori in schools. And I may say that we should be properly bilingual and we should have Maori taught properly in schools, not just sort of tokenism. It's still tokenism at the moment in most places. That, I think, would make a big difference to how our society works, actually. So, you know, there's a few things that you can do, but I mean, if we say, well, look, you know, we're going to work away from victimhood and we're going to work towards self-responsibility. So if there's bullying, for example, okay, one of them is the bully and the other's the victim. Okay, let's look at the victim and say, I mean, we have to discipline the bully, obviously, but we need to look at the person who's the victim and say, well, now, how could you have been more responsible? How could you have dealt with that differently? Why are you the one that's being picked on and not the others? These things need to be looked at. We need to take people out of victimhood, because actually the whole world is working around this whole idea of being victims. I think, I mean, war and everything is, oh, well, these people are beating us up. We're having a hard time. And actually that is, I'm going to be controversial here, but that is where the problems have arisen with Israel, who is controlling a lot of American politics as well, and the Zionists. And
yes,
please don't take me as anti-Semitic, because I am not. But this particular issue has grown out of victimhood because, of course, of the terrible things that happened in Nazi Germany. And so we've got to shift this victimhood from right out of the world. And we can only start here in New Zealand, and we can start in the education system and empower kids instead of making them feel victims.
I love what Mike King is doing with saying people who are feeling really down and vulnerable, let's give them free counselling, because I think victimhood begins with great compassion. I think that strength, even in my own journey, there was a period where I was caught in my story and my past and the awful things that went on when I was young, or the difficult things that happened in my marriage. And it was very hard not to feel, to a certain extent, gosh, it's been a really rugged life journey. And I felt some pity for myself, but I was willing to work at it really hard and understand what had shaped me, and then understand, as you say, Lisa, my responsibility in it. But if someone had come and finger pointed at that stage of vulnerability and said, you just lift yourself up by your bootstraps and get out of it, that was a little bit what my dear old dad used to do, having been through World War II. He'd say, you have no problems, you know, I've been through the war, you've got absolutely no issues at all. And it was too harsh, because when I was younger there was, you know, alcoholism in the background with my mother and lots of those problems that come from that. And I was trying to find my way as a young, giving, sensitive girl, willing to work really hard and please, but realizing over life that that's not the way to do it, that I had to find my way into myself and know me. So there is a great compassion that we need to offer those who are, inverted commas, victims, and then help them find the confidence to find that kia kaha, that find your strength within. Know that you all have this spark of the divine, that nobody outside can break you without your giving them permission at some level. So on that, I see what you're saying, Lisa, but it needs to be done with great love and great compassion.
But if we're teaching in schools self-responsibility,
yes,
before we get there, so the person that's having a hard time fronts it with, well, how can I deal with this?
Yes.
You know, what can I do? And where do I need to get help?
Yes.
Those sorts of things. We can teach our children how to be empowered in that way. Because I'm not saying that there's no situations where they're victims. Obviously they are. But this is the way that we can do it. I mean, if you take it to a slightly more conscious level, if you lift it up to the next level, you can say, and we can't do this in schools yet, but you can say, well, what did I come to this planet to learn?
Exactly.
And why am I in this situation? And I chose my parents anyway.
And that's a wonderful point in the journey when you realize that. I chose this journey, and actually pain is more than just pain. It's my teacher. It's making me want to open up. Don't give up. Don't go to drugs. Don't say it's all too hard. I was just dogged and determined, and I wanted to find why these things had happened. And there's this beautiful gift in the pain, but it takes a few years to understand that, doesn't it?
Well, yes it does, but I also am concerned about suicide in New Zealand, because that is one of the issues here. And we have huge compassion for the people who are choosing to leave us behind. But I'm writing my autobiography at the moment, and I actually am writing a little bit about how I nearly committed suicide, and then I couldn't, because I saw my mother's face when my brother had died, and I couldn't do it to her twice.
Mm.
And so I think there needs to be some education in schools again. Maybe if they're now talking about suicide in schools, which I believe they are, to say, what about your responsibility to staying with your family, and where can you go for help? Where can you take your responsibility to go for help and say, I need help, but not
escape,
bail out and escape and not walk away from the consequences? Because families who have to deal with suicide are so devastated.
I had a similar thing to you in my 20s. I often came very close to it and felt that I wasn't meant to be here. And then this wonderful person I went to see, and I hope this does help someone who's listening, because it really woke me up. It was like having a bucket of cold water. Said, do you realize if you believe in reincarnation, which I happen to, whether you do or not, that's up to you, that if you bail out in this life, you simply set yourself up for the same life, similar circumstances, the same lessons, but you just have to go through all of this again to get to the same point. And I went, oh no, I'm never doing this life this way again, not with this much early life pain. And in those terrible moments where I thought, just leave, just go, it's all too much, I'd think, oh my God, I'd have to live all of this again to this point. Bugger that, excuse my French. And back to your point
about the same experiences, actually.
Yes, it would be horrible to come in and do that life again.
I don't want to do it again.
We're here as souls to learn and to grow, so embrace it as much as you can. And as you say, Lisa, reach out. Just back to your point, Tim, about politicians. I think that story of Matamata and the national labor divide in America, Republican, Democrat, we need to stop the divides. We need to stop politics being tribal. I don't have a great affiliation with any one political party. Give me people who are humanitarian, who care about a beautiful New Zealand countryside, about keeping our Mother Earth clean, really clean and green, about being ethical leaders, about looking at compassionate policies towards human beings. You'll get my vote, whether you're blue, green, red, or purple with pink polka dots. Give up on the party politics.
I agree. Oh, I agree with you.
So
you see,
boring.
I thank you both. We are spiritual beings having an earth experience.
Yes.
I mentioned this to somebody the other day who was stuck, and he said, my gosh, I've never heard of that being said that way. And all of a sudden, a spark ignited, because they realized, thought he was just locked down in this body, and as I said, to live, to reproduce, and to die. And then, the spiritual context came in, and soul comes into it. And I think this is really, really important. And with all kiddies that I see now, I talk to them about their inner candle. Inside you is an inner candle. Mm. And not only that, what does a candle want? Candle really wants oxygen. Okay, breathe deeply.
So if we're going to look at the situation, Tim, and what's happening in New Zealand, and we're all responsible, okay, and we've trashed the earth and not done anything about it to rectify it for the future generations, what are we going to come back to in our next lives? Are we going to come back to a half-dead planet where there isn't enough food for everyone? Starvation, misery, maybe even a lot of society has gone and we're back to almost Stone Age sort of situations. Actually, I hadn't thought of it before, but what will we come back to? Because I am a firm believer in reincarnation.
Absolutely, and that's a wake-up call for those who are the super rich. One may be listening in your mega wealthy car, and good on you, but you don't need 12 of them. Maybe think, I don't want to come back on that other side, so maybe I'll get my act together right now and start waking up in these last years of my life and use a lot of my money, my extra money, to make the planet cleaner and greener and make society fairer. It's very, very simple at its core.
Very true. Karmically, we have to realise that we have to clean up what we have done. And I too, I've believed in reincarnation for at least 45 years, and realise that we're in this wonderful cycle, and we're here for a particular purpose, and we have to get along with our fellow kin, and we have to, in my opinion, create a reality that we're seen as a global family starting to come together.
I loved your idea of the inner candle. The way I put it is, with my children, you have a divine spark. Every human has a divine spark. You know, somebody in the depths of prison after murder can wake up in a moment to that divinity within them. That's the miracle of life. Someone who's got all this money and has been avaricious all their life can suddenly wake up after an illness or a heart attack and go, I'm not going to amass anymore, I'm going to give back. So that's coming home to the divine spark. And I've often thought the second coming, if there is to be one, was never about an outside person, force, being coming and saving us. It is, as Lisa says, about us saving ourselves through finding our way back, often through pain and the learnings of pain, to find, oh my goodness, in the, as I think it was not Jean-Paul Sartre, the other friend, Albert Camus said, in the depths of winter, I found there was inside me an invincible summer. That means a summer that cannot be put out. That is the light. That is the love. That is what we're here to do, to find our way back to that unconditional love, who we are.
Well, I was brought up as a Quaker. I was very lucky, really very blessed. And the core belief, the only belief that you have to believe is, as a Quaker, is there is that of God in everybody. So that's why they did a lot of prison visiting and things like that. And that is the, although I don't actually attend Quaker meetings, that is the core of what I do, what I say, what I believe, what I do. So we need to actually acknowledge that in everyone. And if we start acknowledging that in everyone, then we really won't have a problem with creating a better society than we have now.
I agree with that, and perhaps moreover, teach our children to acknowledge it within themselves, and finally, acknowledge it within each one of us, because when you acknowledge it, as Tim says, once you realize you're a divine being, and is in essence having a physical journey, that's all you are for a brief moment of time, suddenly all the amassing and the death denying, we all will go from here, and we probably will all come back again on whatever side of the divide. But you are here for a brief period of time, do as much good as you can with as much resource as you have, and you will die. And this is what a Chinese woman said, the most important moment of a life is the moment of death, looking back and saying, I did do my best here and I helped as many as I could, because she said that sets the tone, the whole tenor, the vibration, the sound of your next life. That's an extraordinary thought.
This is fantastic, girls. Hope you don't mind me calling you girls. Because namaste, the Hindu greeting. I honour the light behind your eyes. I honour the God within you. And so I want to say namaste to you both, and namaste to every listener as well. We are far more than we ever thought we were.
Namaste.
That was my fellow hosts, Lisa Eyre and Liz Gunn, and I'd like to thank them from deep within my heart. I am so fortunate that they are able to share and assist on Green Planet FM. Decide to network. Use every letter you write, every conversation you have, every meeting you attend, every email you send, and remember, even Facebook, to tweet and to express your fundamental beliefs and dreams. Affirm to others the vision of the world you want. Network through thought. Network through action. Network through love. Network through the spirit. You are the center of a network. You are the center of the world. You are a free, immensely powerful source of life and goodness. Affirm it. Spread it. Radiate it. Think day and night about it, and you will see a miracle happen. The greatness of your own life in a world of big powers, media and monopolies. But of 7.6 billion individuals, networking is the new freedom, the new democracy, a new transparency, and a new form of wholeness and happiness. This originated by Dr. Robert Muller, Chancellor of the World Peace University in Costa Rica, Central America. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 400 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch.
And or Lisa Eyre.
And Liz Gunn.
In the spirit of...